Hello, welcome back to the second part of our chat with Kush the Starboy Bassin.
Yes, we had such a great conversation that we had to split it in two. So if you haven't listened to episode one, make sure you go and listen to that first and pick up where we left off. But for now, this is our second part of our conversation with Kush. How did you end up on a private yacht of a billionaire during COVID?
So
I mean, that's a question and a half.
I've done my research. Yeah. So after Bath, I was big on Twitter while I was in Bath, and I had like 2,500 followers because I'd written on the back of Raymond.
Nice.
Because he used to be on Twitter. So I'd tweeted a dish of a Sunday lunch special to my boss then, Sam. He'd replied, Atul Kocha, the Michelin-starred Indian chef who followed Sam and saw the reply and then saw the picture of the food and then found me and looked at my profile. He basically said, a British Indian chef, not cooking Indian food, but at this level with his training, I want to get in touch. So he DM'd me on Twitter.
Come and cook Indian food.
Yeah, basically said, would you like to come and work at Benares? And I'd done 2 years in Bath by then. So I went to meet him, Mayfair, Berkeley Square, totally different ball game from sleepy Oxford and Bath. Had an interview with him. He said, I'd like to become executive sous chef here. I was like, ooh, executive. And help modernize the menu a bit. Beast of a restaurant, turntables, 300 covers, Michelin star, totally different cuisine. Never cooked Indian food before by then.
And the clientele, completely different, I imagine, as well. Because I used to work in Berkeley. I used to work above Benares. I was the least paid person in Berkeley
Square. He was
the
person who puts all the stickers on the apples.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And
that you have to peel off.
You have to peel off. They're useless.
So great job.
Yeah. And so Berkeley Square, Mayfair, is just one of the most rich places in London. It's, you know, just around that square, you've got the Ferrari garage, the Porsche garage, the Bentley garage, the Rolls Royce garage. Yeah. Like, it is just hedge funds, private banking, wealth management, and the people going into the restaurants are just moneyed up to the eyeballs.
Yeah, money up to the eyeballs. And then the lunch trade was tourists who were coming off Oxford Street for Michelin star Indian food, which you can only get in the UK at that stage. So he said, come for dinner that night. So rang my friend up, who's also a chef, and said, do you want to go for dinner? I was going to meet up with them anyway. We'll go for dinner at Benares. Rocked up, had seven courses. And by the second course, which was a tandoori skewer, I said, I have to work it because I need to learn how they make that.
Wow.
That's incredible.
And on the skewer, it was a crown of quail, a Sikh kebab, a jumbo prawn, and a bit of sea bass, each in a different marinade, but each one cooked perfectly. So the sea bass had crispy skin somehow.
So it wasn't all just done on a single skewer?
It was all done on a single skewer at the same time in a tandoor.
What? But we know from our experience that you can't do that and cook all those things perfectly.
If any people
together
that know about Indian Michelin star, it's the two people sitting across from you right now.
Yeah. That to me sounds incredibly difficult.
Yes.
Yeah.
So essentially you're cooking four different proteins on a metal stick in a furnace where the only controls are opening a little oxygen vent at the bottom.
So did you, I take it, you learn how to do that?
I learned how to do that and I let them do that. So I basically said, I need to learn how to cook that. I went back to Bath. I went to the bookshop and bought the Benares cookbook. And I said, right, if this works, this Benares cookbook works, and it's not all fake, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I made a slow cooked Rogan Josh whole lamb shoulder following the recipes exactly. And it was sensational.
Wow.
Like two perfectly spiced and perfectly seasoned. And I followed it to the letter. I was like, well, that works. The food was fantastic. It's on Berkeley Square. Yes. It's so perfect. I gave 8 months notice, I think.
Wow.
Because I wanted to finish the year.
Okay.
And I wasn't in that much rush because it would have meant moving out of one lease, finding rental. It was a big thing. I'm not going to rush into it.
Getting rid of all the wine bottles.
That part, yeah. Selling the car.
Yeah.
That was painful.
And your role, were you managing specific stations or
so executive sous chef. So there was executive head chef, executive sous chef. Then there was the head chef and then a sous chef. So I was second in command, looking after purchasing, menu development and cooking as well. So
you actually on the pass in the kitchen during the services as well? What were you doing?
So I was
tasting stuff going, this is crap, send it back.
So the first few months was spent battling the chefs who were already there, set in their ways. So most the average
new
age in the
upstart bowls in.
Yeah, the average upstart coconut rocks up.
Explain.
Coconut.
I've never heard that phrase before.
Brown and hair on the outside, but white on the inside.
I've never heard that.
Have you not heard that before?
No.
No? Okay. You know, went to Catholic and Quaker school, grew up in Berkshire, no Indian friends at all, no Indian university colleagues.
Have never cooked Indian food.
Can't speak Hindi or Punjabi.
Right.
Rocking up and saying, no, you can't do that. To a 40-year-old chef that had worked at Oberoi and Taj in India and been flown over just to do the tandoori food there.
So how did that go down?
It took a while.
Yeah.
Then they realised, oh, I'm just trying to make things a bit more efficient and health and hygiene and the really boring bits. And then banter. And then say, give them an hour, extra hour off at lunch. So I'm like, you'd have to do all of that.
You're so generous.
Yeah, extra hour.
Cook it better.
Cook it safer. So got to help run the kitchen there and work with Atul on, again, development, help him manage his restaurants in India. And we had another Banaras in Madrid, which was fun because I got to go to Madrid and help do their menu there and eat tapas and drink wine. In Madrid.
We get him to judge our food.
I know.
Can you believe how stupid is that? He has to eat and pass comment on our food.
I don't do it that often, though, do I?
I know, but what, like... You do it. Even if you're not doing it for video, though, you do it silently.
It goes back around the corner and you're like...
No, I don't know. So I watch how you make it. I'm not going to taste that. did that for 2 years. It was short because London's a very fast-paced city. We used to, the rota would come out on a Friday night for the next week. I was lonely. I was dating. I met Amisha, my now wife and mother of my child. And I literally thought, I can't build a relationship with this person if I don't have a routine. Mm-hmm. I can't text them on a Friday saying, do you want to go on a date on Tuesday and Wednesday?
You've got all of that. The tiredness and you're battling against your actual personality.
Yes.
So that, I mean, dating must be really... there are so many obstacles.
I was a lot slimmer and athletic then. I had that going for me.
Yeah,
which
nice.
My wife now reminds me of quite a lot.
this is not what I bought.
No, not what I signed up to. So I looked again for a job where I could do just weekends off so I can get to know her. And private chefing had always been something I was looking at. So a job spec came up online on my break. I was sitting in the office. I think it was at Atul's desk on his computer, just clicking refresh.
Working hard.
Yeah. I was working on my break.
Yeah. Oh, okay, fine.
I was on my break. Yeah. Job spec popped up for private chef needed for a business and upper higher net worth individual. That's what they're called. That could mean, you know, various things.
Yeah.
To work in Mayfair, Monday to Friday, holiday allowance, decent salary, blah, blah, blah. Must be able to cook Indian food. I was like,
hello.
I emailed back, went and met the sales director for the company who explained a bit more, saying it's a Indian billionaire. They've just set up their private offices in the company, property developer in Mayfair, looking for someone to cook him lunch.
Probably owned your building.
Yes.
Also has a mega yacht, a 70-meter mega yacht. So you might have to go do that cooking there sometimes.
That sounds awful.
Can you cook Indian food? I'm like, yeah, I've been working at Banaras 2 years. Fine. Job interview. The yacht's currently... in the med, can you get out there? And I was like, I can't at short notice.
What on a dinghy?
To fly down to Nice for them to send a tender in to take me on board to do my job interview on the yacht. I was like, I can't do that this week because literally I can't.
We took him to the pub because
the rota.
Yeah. We took him to the pub around the corner.
I know, we went to the dog and truck, didn't we?
So didn't manage to get that interview. So 2 weeks later, I flew to Mumbai for 4 days, landed, I had to go cook breakfast and then do a party for him at his house, which I then later found out it was his wife's 30th birthday party. So I did a 7-course menu there, did breakfast.
Was he the same age?
He was the youngest Indian billionaire ever. He had a billion at 30. And then got the job, left Banaras, and then a week later I was on the yacht cooking in, I think we were at Ibiza.
And pressure-wise, how did it compare to being in the kitchens?
So... in the kitchen, it's very structured. A large team around you that you're managing and your focus is the next 3 months, let's say. The day-to-day should take care of itself in the kitchen. If it's not, there's something wrong. As a private chef, the day-to-day is you turn up for work. They will eat at some stage, but you don't know when. So you have to be ready. They might not want to eat what you've already prepared for them. That's printed on the menu, so you have to be ready. They might not eat at all, but they would have read the menu, so they won't want it the next day because they'll think it's old. So you've got to start from scratch every day.
This is such a different mindset. Can you imagine being in the position where you've hired a private chef because they are an expert at what they do, and they come to you and say, I've cooked you this. Can you imagine being in the position of going, no.
I don't fancy it.
No, don't fancy that today,
actually. It's even worse than that, isn't it? It's like you have to be their thought process of, do you know what I fancy? A sandwich. Can I have a sandwich, please?
I'd have liked that. So the rules were, I say rules, the dietary restrictions, vegetarian, no eggs, no sugar, allergic to citrus, no butternut squash, carrots, pumpkin, orange vegetables for some reason. I think the sweetness he didn't like.
Vegetarian, but not really with any veg, please.
Yeah, no, hated mushrooms, didn't like artichokes, loved olives, hyper-athletic, his whole family, so had to be balanced, and didn't like the same ingredients repeated within a week. And wanted a four-course meal of a different cuisine every day.
At that point...
Is that even possible?
You're just pushing buttons to see how far you can push them.
So that's
right?
What it ended up after 4 years. It started off a bit like less restrictions, and he's got a bit more... As I started to tickle the boxes, like, oh, no, let's have another course every day and a different cuisine. So it was, right, we're going to go around the world basically in a week. Within those restrictions.
That's why our global street food episodes are so good.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure they're eating capsulon though.
No, no, no. Carbs, no deep-fried carbs, no. And then working on the yacht was a totally different ball game. So a super yacht, mega yacht, operates as a floating 7-star hotel that you own, and you own everyone on board, and anything you want goes at any time of the day. And it's all free because it's already paid for by the charter company and stuff. So they come back from Pasha at 4 a.m. and want a tasting menu to finish at sunrise.
So you are working. So you could have gone to bed at this time.
Yeah, you'd wake up. A stewardess would ring your cabin and say, yeah, boss is back on in 1 hour. They've rung ahead and they want this.
Oh, it's just you.
No, it was, there was three of us on board.
Oh, okay.
So there'd always be a full-time head chef and a sous chef that would do all the charters and the other guests. Then I'd fly in, hopefully ahead of the boss landing, and get set up.
So were you in a position that sits above those two?
I'd sit alongside the head chef of the yacht when I was on board.
Because you were the personal chef.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So during lockdown, I got obsessed with Below Deck. We watched like every series going of Below Deck, Med, like all of the different sailboat, like all of the different like adventure ones. Like, and the story of Below Deck was as much about the guests and kind of their extreme requests and all of that kind of stuff. But it was actually more about the crew. How hard work it is to do and the standards that are expected. Mm. But then also what happens when you get a night off?
Yeah.
So how... What was that balance like?
So I've seen one episode of Below Deck and I realised the boat on Below Deck is quite small and it's quite cheap.
Relatively.
So it was 100,000 euros a night to charter the yacht that my boss had dry. That's without full fuel, food or drink. So the guests that were going on...
It's a different world.
...were of a different level and expected different things and the standards were elevated. To the point of, like, the yacht he helped design himself. So it had a half a basketball court on the front of it. It had a cinema in the back of it because his son liked movies and basketball. It had a running track around the main deck because he was athletic. It had a gym in the prime position on the top because he was athletic. He took the boat to Mallorca to go get his son trained by Tony Nadal, Rafa's uncle, who coached him. We spent 3 weeks sitting off the coast just so we could attend tennis camp. So, yeah.
Hang on, you got this job... So that you'd have spare time for your relationship.
Yes. And then...
When?
No, that's the thing. The spanner got thrown in because it could have been drop of a hat. Like, I'd wake up, I'd go for a shower, I'd come out of the shower, there'd be a text saying, he wants you here on Monday for 3 weeks. I was like, oh.
And is this because you were good at your job and therefore he asked... There was more asked of you because you were doing really well?
So I... Because he'd flown me to India to train with his chefs there. Because he had chefs in India as houses there, so I knew exactly how he liked his food and his family liked their Indian food, and I'd got quite good at doing vegetarian stuff from all over the world by then, And so just another chef to bring on board. And he could say, oh, I've got my chef coming with me, obviously. I used to fly to New York ahead of them to set the kitchens up there.
Yeah, he'd come turn up with you on his arm. You'd be his younger, his little chef bimbo.
No, I flew like premium economy by then, luckily, ahead to get set up.
Oh, you've gone up in the world. Yeah. What's premium economy like?
It's like widescreen. It's just wider seats.
Oh, lovely.
So I'd be the entourage. I'd get there ahead, set everything up, make sure there's soup in the fridge and his favorite kind of dal and stuff like that. Also had to go like furnish some properties for him now and again.
Furnish them?
Yeah, so he moved from the 55th story of 67 Park Avenue, 67 in Park Avenue, somewhere like that.
Quite a specific address to give out on the internet, but yeah, sure.
He moved from there right, to a super tall, famous skyscraper on the 62nd floor. And
better view.
Yeah. Stunning view, like kitchen window was over Central Park.
And you'd kit his kitchen out?
No, well, I had to kit everything out. So I went there a week before.
Interior designer as well?
No, they were painting this place when I landed.
Okay.
And I turned up and I was, by this stage, I'd got to know the family. I'd been there 3 years. I was like, right. I spoke to the property developer who was managing it, who was actually employed by him, saying, so where's the laundry room? There, right? Where's all the stuff for it? It's like, what do you mean? Well, where are the Dysons? Where are the drying racks? Where are all the small things that you can't live without? And they hadn't thought about any of that. So it all fell on me. And then once the boss's wife learned I was doing this, she asked to say, oh, can you pick these things up? These things up? These things up? So I spent a week just going to Bloomingdale's and throwing money. $16,000 on towels.
Ooh, what's the thread count on that?
So he really liked a specific Italian towel that they had on the yacht, and only Bloomy sold them. And for the 6-bedroom apartment, they needed new towels. So I went and bought towels. And then it went into Molton Brown hand soaps and lovely French candles for the £110 each. And there would need to be 3 per room.
Of course.
That were never burnt. They were just there to look at.
Yeah.
So it was private shopping, decorator, style.
What were your cooking budgets? Was it limitless?
I had a preloaded credit card that didn't have to get checked by anyone. Mm-hmm. So for year one, £64,000 on food.
£64,000 on food in a year.
Yeah, to feed like 2 or 3 people.
You spent £64,000 in a year on feeding 2 people.
Yeah,
just getting a video title.
It was some yacht.
Well played.
Thank you.
There was some yacht shopping involved, but it was a specific brand of Japanese instant coffee with gold flake in it that you guys know.
Oh, we tried it.
Yeah,
it's really delicious.
That's the only one that he'd want to drink. The only place to buy it was Harrods. So I knew the manager there that used to purchase it, and he'd let me know when it was coming in, and I would buy it all at £110 a jar. So that was a grand a month on that, just gone. Flying paneer to the yacht isn't as easy as it sounds. So you've got to buy the polystyrene boxes, you've got to buy the dry ice to pack the paneer frozen to fly it to the yacht to go into the freezer there because you're going on a 3-week trip.
Is that by helicopter?
No, fly it there in my suitcase on the private jet.
Oh, So you were going in private jet.
Yeah, I
went on private jet. Let's just skim over that, shall we?
What?
Well, you know, he dropped in premium economy earlier, and I was really impressed. But
now we're on a PJ.
Yeah. During COVID, I got a message saying he's going to the Caribbean. He says you should come because it'd be nice for you. Because he knew I was at my apartment in East London. So I left Amisha there and went to the Caribbean.
You weren't even married at the time, were you?
No.
What's Amisha thinking about all of this? Because suddenly you're living the life.
No,
you're
spending working.
Yeah, but you're spending $16,000 on towels in Bloomingdale.
Yeah. Yeah. I got the points. So yeah, it was a very up and down. Some really bad bits, like going to work in London. The kitchen was smaller than this set. Because it was in a prime location on Brook Street near Claridge's, there wasn't much space for a kitchen. Make a 4-course meal, ready by midday, and then sit down and plan my next day. Then find out at 4 p.m., oh, he's gone off to play golf. When did he leave? 10 a.m. I'm like, so I've been sitting here for 6 hours waiting for him.
To tell me that the 4-course meal that I've cooked
is now going to go home in Tupperware to my house for my dinner. I have to come in and make a new one up tomorrow. And one of his staff had known this and no one was sitting downstairs, but didn't communicate. And that's when it really got a bit like, What am I doing?
And so COVID.
Yeah.
Everything gets locked down. He jumps on a yacht. And he expects you
well,
to
he
go
stayed
with
at his place in Knightsbridge for a while, and I used to do his shopping for him and get it delivered. So I'd use our veg supply that we use here, We Chef. I'd get picked up from my apartment by one of his drivers in his daughter's Beam at BMW. Concierge would come in the Range Rover with another driver, and his cook slash nanny from his apartment would come in another driver, and we'd distribute the food out, and then we'd all go back to our properties, having never touched or met. So we didn't break any rules with the shopping, but it was a large process to get one family their ingredients, because even though we were under restrictions, he still wanted his berries, his vegetables from Globe around the world, and his herbs. And so I'd facilitate that as well as do his...
But they were cooking it themselves?
He had a live-in nanny that he'd brought over from India.
Okay.
That would look after his young kids and also do Indian home cooking.
Fine.
It's like, that is the very definition of when people talk about everybody was locked down, everybody was under the same restrictions, but everyone lived a very different life during that time. That is crazy. But,
And did he want to jump on the yacht and take you with him at some point?
Well, yeah, because he realized it's not going to be a short thing. And the yacht at the time had a group of Americans that at the beginning of lockdowns in the US had literally just chartered it for a month and flown there. And so they were there and he couldn't kick them off.
It's just $100,000 a night for a month. Just, it's $3 million.
Oh my goodness.
It's $3 million just for a month.
Without the food or drink.
Or
paying anyone
So
to work aboard
it. As soon as they got off, they had a day to turn the yacht around in terms of clean everything, get new staff on because they'd had to change the rotors, and then we flew in.
And for how long?
3 weeks.
So you were on there for 3 weeks?
3 weeks, sitting in the Caribbean.
And you're not in a position to say no. So you've got a partner at home. Yep. You were going through things like trying to buy a house and stuff like that. And flick of a switch, you get a message that says, I need you in the Caribbean tomorrow. And now for a lot of people, you go, I've got a message saying I need to be in the Caribbean tomorrow. This is amazing. Yeah. But I'm guessing at certain points, you were just like, I can't even think about doing that. But you're not in a position to say no?
No, I missed some big family parties when I was in New York working with there. This one was, Amisha was like, go. Like, otherwise, I was at home baking a loaf of sourdough every day and making reels.
Which is still on your highlights.
Still on my highlights, yeah. They were good. They're good recipes.
Yeah.
And so she was like, go. Like, yeah. Like, she was working from home in her office full time. So
I was here all the time.
I was literally...
You should go.
I was cooking, baking and exercising. So I went out and I got to swim off the back of the yacht holding a rope because we were sitting there and he was off having lunch in St. Bart's. The captain of the yacht was like, you can all go for a swim for half an hour if you want, which was quite a change from the 3 years before when it was very military. It relaxed a bit and just got to meet different people and see them. And they'd all been bubbled on the yacht. And it was all last minute because we had to get a permit to fly out of Stansted at 1 a.m, do all the COVID tests. So I had to get picked up and driven to a thing to get my COVID test and then pack a suitcase and fly out there. And it was surreal. And then, I got a text message from Benjamin David Ebrill saying, hey Kush, got time for a chat.
That's a really good impression.
So I got home that day after throwing lunch in the bin because he didn't eat it, probably something like that, or eating my body weight in very fancy chocolate. That's what I used to do back then. And I walked into the house that me and Amisha had bought after having to cancel our wedding twice. We just bought a house instead of moved out of London. And I said, oh, Ben wants a chat. And she's like, it's a job. I was like, all right. Went upstairs, called him, and he was like, you know James? I was like, ah.
We've had a massive argument. He stormed out of the studio.
What do I do?
We don't think he's coming back.
What do I do? He was like, you know James? I'm like, yeah. I think I might have met him once at university, but it was the year below, and he was out for a year working while we were at university. I'd never watched a sorted video up until that stage, if I'm honest.
Cheers, mate.
Wow.
So nice. Why would I need support. To?
Because
entertainment,
mate. He had 2,500 Twitter followers.
I had direct access to Ben.
The videos weren't just about Ben.
I didn't know that. I thought it was like MasterChef, but Ben is just sitting there and you're feeding him.
Oh, no wonder you didn't watch it.
Yeah. And he said, "Would you like to come and essentially help fix something that's failing. No. James Curry did a great job. And he said it would be, you know, a bit of filming, recipe development, home ecking style things, so I could draw on my experience with BBC and cookbooks and all of that. And I was like, okay. Spoke to me. She was like, yeah, go for it.
So did that just come at like a pointed moment where you were getting frustrated with everything else that was going on in your world? Considering how glamorous it looks from the outside, like the actual internal workings of it are hard, and you were frustrated, and Ben's message just came at the right moment.
Yeah, I've done literally 4 years there and I wasn't learning anything. I'd had all my experiences. I'd got to cater for Formula One for the yacht and go watch it from a rooftop on the start finish line. I'd done all of that. I'd traveled quite extensively and eaten Wagyu beef coming out of my ears on the yacht and tins of caviar because it was fun, and spent thousands and, you know, lived up in New York and done my jog through Central Park and all that.
But it was a phase.
It was a phase, yeah.
Yeah, it was time to go and do some charity work.
And we had the house, and it was not in Central London. So opportunity to be a bit more dynamic and go into a different industry, you know, production, whatever you call this.
I don't know what we call it. We've been doing it for 15 years and we don't know what we call it.
Shambles.
Yeah. It's like a canteen.
Yeah.
That was that, really. He said there's one other person interviewing a lady, apparently. I don't know if this is true.
I think he knows me too well.
He said, and basically said, well, if it's mine, I'll just be like, yeah, what? So, you know, give me a bit of, you know, update your CV and send it in.
Put a bit of effort
in. We'll put it to the board.
Turn up wearing a suit and then we'll get you changed into your...
No. came down here, looked around, instantly judged you all.
Yeah.
Found out you had one fridge.
I love that that's been your biggest bugbear, is that we only had one fridge. And we had two. It's just that the other one had the back cut out of it so we could put a camera in it.
So, I was like, well, there's some changes I'd need to make. Buying a few more fridges, taking the doors off the cupboards, learning that there are under-counter lighting that James didn't know in 9 years. There was lighting above the sink area. It didn't even have a draining rack. Imagine a sink, no draining rack, doing all the washing up. Like, was James handcuffed? Because he didn't have a work card, did he? No money, no wallet. He lived here, didn't he? He's like, I can't have a fridge. I can't even turn the lights on.
I think the big difference is James built that job into what it became, because that job didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, he joined us, and we should probably do the same chat with him actually at some point.
Yeah.
But he joined us when, you know, it was just about recipe development and it was never meant to be anything else. And it was a part-time thing and it kind of grew and grew and grew over time. And he built it into...
like figuring it out as you go and going, well, now we need a bit of this and a bit of that. And it ended up probably being a slightly misfitting jigsaw puzzle that was actually up and running it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like for, you know, a number of years before he left.
But it's also in a world that's constantly evolving.
Yeah.
And so we were like, okay, now it's about cookbooks. Now it's about, oh, we're going to go and do this tour around the US for 3 months. Are you coming? Do you want to write some blog posts? Do you want to help us create an app? And so like all of this, it was constantly changing. So actually trying to...
No wonder he was like, I just want to go and work in a kitchen again.
I just want to know what my job is.
I just want to do horrible 18-hour days in the dark. Hot, because that would be better.
But like trying to write down what his job role was when he was leaving and saying to like you or to anybody else and going, right, here's the job as we see it. It was a really difficult process to go through.
I'm assuming that's why there was never a role advertised and it had to be via WhatsApp, like the back channels.
Yeah, we had to go into the black
Do we know
market.
Someone who might be able to do this kind of thing?
Because I don't know how to formalise it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I've got some questions I'd like you to answer truthfully. With how
I'm
it was
always
sold,
truthful and blunt.
I know you are.
If there's anyone in this room that is truthful,
it's very
constantly.
True. So with the idea of the job or the types of things that you'd be doing to the reality, were they similar? Were they better? Were they worse?
As you said, it was quite a vague brief working at a company that did many different things, and in the last 3 years we've done many different things. It's a lovely balance of working in a very intimate, dynamic company, doing various little things with the backbone about good food always. Mm-hmm. And I think the freedom to create and make light of situations and sometimes turn around and say, this is a job. Mm. Poker face? Paid to do this?
Do you like relish those moments? So when we like when the idea for a poker face comes up,
of course.
And you've got like, right, we need six dishes that are going to take us in completely different places.
And we need extreme reactions.
Different reactions, bodily functions, and everything else. Like, how much do you enjoy those moments?
I think the first poker face I did, we had extreme bitter. We had Bittrex on it.
You introduced us to the world of Bittrex.
I remember making a quite elaborate cheesecake with a clarified rhubarb jelly, burnt honeycomb on the side of it.
Remember
and then
it
over
well.
The years, the dishes have started to go, right, well, we want to get the reaction, whatever they do. So it can just be a piece of toast with citric acid on it, right?
Yeah.
Reaction. So I've brought
But it's all in the pun.
It's all in the pun.
It's all in the pun.
I think I've brought a bit of efficiency into that side of it.
Yeah.
If the end result's the same.
Fit for purpose.
Fit for purpose, yeah.
Because
I didn't need to make that quite in multi-layered cheesecake to make someone chunder.
What are the moments you enjoy most?
Getting home. most enjoyable bit of it. I really like the lives.
Yeah,
because it's a bit like when you used to be at school and all go away on a big class trip for a week, you know, no parents, get to drink a lot, get to cook for a large amount of people. It can be as creative and wacky and there's no bad ideas, really.
You go into your own world, actually, on those live, like the big weekends that we do, like you go into a completely different place when it comes to the organization, the cooking for the whole team, and there's not what,
yeah, 20, the food schedule
people, food schedule, plus you've got the food that's required for filming that we're doing for the lives, and then on top of that doing the on-camera stuff, plus every now and again you and I just take our tops off and stand in the background of stuff that's being filmed as well. Like, you go into such a different mindset.
But I think that's fascinating because it's like it's almost like you've taken every single part of the journey so far and what you've learned and those skills. And it's like, here are the fundamentals of planning, of efficiency. And here, like, this is going to be a good job. Like, this is all thought through and all planned. And now, because of that structure, we've got dick around time to sit on top of that.
Yeah.
And it's lovely that you properly dick around with us as well, because you know you've got that structure and it's all thought through and planned.
As you said, it's the planning. If I know this is the end result in a month's time, we're going to do this at a farmhouse in Sussex. We need this for that. When do I need to order it? And it's all stepping it backwards. And it is spreadsheets. And it's a bit like the yacht things. It's like, right, how do I get these ingredients from all over the world and bring them together in one little thing? And if I can do all of that in advance and have all the spreadsheets, then there is relaxing time. And I do like having the budget as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, right, we've got X amount of thousands to spend on this.
Wink, just winked.
How much can I save and where can that money go to make our lives easier?
Yeah.
When you say easier or better. Yeah, because you're like, I saved some money, so I bought us a nicer bottle of wine.
Yes,
yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I went to a nice butcher's and got a 8 kilo pork shoulder that I'm going to slow cook overnight and subsequently break the whole electrics of the house.
We've managed to free up some budget between the YouTube production team and the food team. Let's buy a 400 pound wheel of Parmesan.
Yes,
exactly.
Oh, I can split the cost of this vacuum packing machine with Tom, the head of production, because you're going to use it in a video, but I also want it. So I love those things. And the live is that, like, down to a T. Also, we get to have a sleepover.
You're so right, though. I think the big weekend things that we do, and actually it comes down to the travel stuff that we do as well. Like, there is months and months and months of planning and work that goes into making those happen. But actually, at the end of the day, we've got 3-4 days on site and we all have a job to do and we have to get it done within that moment. And the way that the whole team and like the external teams that come in and help us on those projects, the way that we all come together, they are just my favorite things. It feels like one team doing something as well as we possibly can. And what I love about it is, as well as we possibly can means dick around as much as we possibly can and make it as fun for everyone watching it and joining in online as it is for us. And that, yeah, I've never experienced teamwork like that in like a work setting. before. I love that so much.
It's even the micro briefs. When you guys finally got through the woods on that Friday at the wintery, frosty ice one we did.
It's Snow Way Out.
Snow Way Out, that's it. Sorry, baby brain. It was like, right, have some hot food ready for us because we're going to need it. Right, what kind of thing you want? Oh, I'll just put some pub sacks together. Ooh, a pork pie tower comes to mind.
Yeah.
Like a pyramid of Scotch eggs.
Pork pie tower.
Yeah. There's no other job where you can just say like, that'll work.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. The supermarkets have a hilarious time when they deliver some of those shopping baskets. It's like, you spend £1,000 on pub snacks and Scotch eggs. For who? Oh, we're all up here. We're filming. Filming what? Not quite sure yet. Can I watch? No, tickets have sold out.
So how long have you been doing this? Sorted?
Sorted. It'll be 3 years in May.
Oh, we're getting very close to the Kush 4-year itch.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
Is that a thing?
What do you tell us?
Yeah. From the sounds of it, four years move on.
No, but a different place in my life
don't.
Now.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. House.
Have more babies.
Never moving.
Yeah.
Baby.
Get more settled, please.
More settled? What can I do? Oh, redo the patio. Plant some things at home. Put a plum tree in the ground for my baby. So she's got a little plum tree that'll grow with her so she can pick
same
plums.
Same age as her. I love that. Yeah.
It actually planted the day before because she came 10 days early. So nearly perfect.
But in order to scratch the Kush itch, what do we need to be doing next in order for you to feel like you're learning and trying new things and developing?
It's tricky. It is tricky without like making myself sound like a pompous a-hole. But
I like pompous a-hole.
Like learning global street foods.
Yeah.
I made something yesterday that we're filming next week because I had to make it in advance because I didn't know if it was physically possible. I've only found two videos of them ever making this thing from the country that it's, I can't say where it's from. Amazing. Or what it is. So I'll attempt it and it worked the first time. So that's ready in the freezer to defrost and redo something with to feed it to you guys. So I'd never heard of it. So it was a bit of research. I got to taste one, totally new. Wow, learning. Getting to play with new equipment and gadgets is quite fun.
Yeah.
I like teaching.
Yeah.
So I like educating you
guys. You're really
as well.
Good. Really
I like,
good
like buying the vacuum pack machine. It's like, well, these are all the things it can do and more. Building efficiency into things, clawing time back for everyone, if that makes sense. Yeah. I'm a feeder at the end of the day as well. Yeah. So,
very good feeder.
Did you ever expect to be on camera?
Yes.
When you
I was quite surprised it took so long. And I know why.
And this is probably more a thing like we've talked about with James before, and you always felt like you pushed James to be on camera when he might not necessarily have originally started out wanting to do that. And
look at the brand deals he gets on Instagram as a result. So, you know, I'll take my 5%.
And so there was probably some reservations from our side. We don't want to like repeat history.
I think it was, I remember the phone call I had with Ben when I was at my house. I was like, would I be on camera? And I phrased it as, would I be on camera? But I think he heard it as, oh, would I be on camera?
Okay.
And I think that intonation mistake possibly filtered down to it taking quite a while. Because it might have been like, oh, no, it didn't sound like he wanted to be on camera. I think it might have been assumed. But I was always up for it.
Yeah, well, regardless. So
I've been on camera before.
Within 4 weeks.
A long time ago, BBC, you know, prime time, 8 p.m. on BBC Two. So I know what, you know, pack shots are and things like that. You call them sexies, by the way.
But yeah.
So I was always up for it.
Yeah, 4 weeks in, I was like, we need to get this guy on a cap. Get a lens in front of him because
4 weeks
this will be fantastic. Yeah.
There are a lot of community questions that came in focused on what we do now and things that have happened, particularly over the last few months. Just having a look around the studio, I think we're in a safe space. Right. Barry and the sous chef apron. Like the biggest question that came through on Instagram was people going, did he really deserve it? And if it was up to you, who would you have given it to?
I like this.
So it's a hard thing to do because the title sous chef, it took me personally a degree education working at some of the best restaurants around to get that title. And Barry's walked in, asked me for some help in developing what he's going to cook for some people on a camera and being called a sous chef. So it's a bit of a slap in the face to me, him being called a sous chef.
Okay. Yep.
And also, who is he the sous to?
Is he not Ebbers?
A sous is a second, right?
Yeah, you and Ebbers.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, then no, he shouldn't be the sous chef because I wouldn't have given him that title personally based on that day.
Okay. Go on.
The best single dish that day was your fried chicken.
I agree with that. I 100% agree with that.
But
Frank didn't like it because it was spicy.
Well, luckily Ben wasn't judging it. And I did rib Barry at the start, and then it just turned into me being gremlin mode and any other opportunity to...
Well, it's like, you know. It's that's just human nature, isn't it?
Yeah.
Spot a hole,
yeah.
Keep digging.
I was going to say something different, but yeah. He didn't dislike it at the start. I don't think he liked the repetition and like almost like kind of FaceTiming him on a weekend and just like shouting at him, you're not a sous chef. That really got to him. But no, he's a lovely chap.
Another question that was asked was, do you have any wholesome Ebbers stories or moments from university?
They don't have to be wholesome. They could be absolutely horrible.
There was a time in the Isle of Wight. Not that one. I've got a fun one where he told me off once.
Go on.
So like I said, we did all our coursework together because we were both the top of our year. And I hadn't started my part of the project. And this was to get our, like, this was our final year. We should share a wall, as in our rooms were next to each other. And he had to call me in and like kind of chastise, not belittle at all. He's never like that. But basically tell me
have
to grow up.
Have a firm word.
Have a firm word and say, I expect this work done at the right time. Why do I have to chase you for it? And full well he knew that I was still very hungover. So then I went off and did my work and handed it in to him.
Did he?
And he scored it and put it into the presentation and we got an A plus, whatever. But no, he was very good at university. He brought together my, you know, mad ramblings. And I was very good at PowerPoint, I must say. I used to make animations on PowerPoint by getting things to move across the screen and things like that. And then spent hours just doing like one slide once. Have little stick men walking around a little queuing system at a fictional West Ham stadium that we had to do for one of our management things. So he was very good at university, guiding us. He was like dad of the group.
One of the other things the community really wanted to know was people who are looking to start out a cooking career. Like, do you have any advice for them? Because you've worked in so many different areas of the restaurant and the food.
And display so many characteristics in order to be successful as well. What advice would you give?
If you're already 30, 35, maybe don't try.
That's like, good advice.
What, like keep it as a hobby?
Yeah, because it takes a lot of energy and just time. If you already have a life and let's say a family, it's going to be very hard to dedicate enough time to get to the level that you want to quickly, let's say. If you're younger, go to college and then get experience in an actual restaurant really,
so what,
really
learn the
early
theoretical
on.
Theoretical foundation then.
And cook at the same time. Mm-hmm. So do your college lectures and things like that and your cooking, but also work. Because you might not like it once you see actually what it is like.
I also think there's so many different ways that you could go now, like with the social media kind of thing, like having that hobby and turning it into something that has an output online, small like bakeries that people have started at home that start selling through Etsy and, you know, places like there are so many different ways that you could go rather than it having to be a full time. This is where I'm heading to.
Yeah. If you want to become a restaurant chef because you love eating at restaurants and you like MasterChef and those kind of shows online, get straight into a kitchen and learn what it's like at the bottom and then just make a decision. Don't spend money on courses or enroll in something to then find out a year later, oh, it's not pretty. But as you're right, if you're a home baker, go and get experience at a bakery and see if you can just do that directly. If you already have the skill for it, do that. Social media and those kind of things is, for me, a bit of a gray area because it's massive and a large part of my life, like doom scrolling, but also we have a large following, but also that a food influencer versus a chef on Instagram are very different things. Mm-hmm. So if you like the food that someone's cooking, understand where their trainings come from and see if you need to get some training as well to match that.
Mm.
Or if you've got a knack for being in front of the lens and you want to do that, then by all means. But if you want to become a work in restaurants, experience is the first thing because it's really hard to get into a kitchen without experience. So you find someone that'll let you in at the beginning.
Nice. Right. Shag, marry, kill the normals.
That was a question.
That was a question.
Okay.
I'd marry Jamie.
Come on. Okay. I mean, I'm not thinking about shagging. I'm thinking about
no, but that's
who
the easy
you killing
one.
Out of me and Jamie.
That's
me
the
and
easy
Baz.
One because he's got a smoker and a wood vibe and a pizza oven. So,
yeah, so you're marrying him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm worried that you're questioning whether you're going to kill me over Barry. That's what I'm concerned about here.
Shag's a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Killing's permanent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we still have to work here afterwards? Because that'd be really awkward.
I think you're thinking about it too much.
I'd shag Mark and kill Barry.
Right. I thought that's what you'd say. Yeah. Yeah. There's no surprises.
I'd give you the time of your life.
Well, now we've got that out of the way, you could do the ultimate question.
The ultimate question. What one dish should everyone cook before they die? Yeah.
That's a loaded question.
It's a good one, isn't it? No, it's not.
It's not.
What, vegetarians, they want to eat steak.
It's up to you.
What about vegans?
What's the one thing that you'd encourage people to not just taste, but
like
to actually cook themselves?
What if they don't like cooking?
Again, stop analysing the question.
You're thinking about it a little bit too much.
One dish.
Yeah.
Everyone must cook before they die.
Yeah.
One dish everyone must cook before they die. One dish everyone must cook. Fried chicken.
Why? Good answer.
It's delicious.
Correct, by the way.
And it's, people don't deep fry at home because it's a faff.
Yeah. You text me last Wednesday evening with a picture of you deep frying chicken going, deep fry some chicken on Wednesday.
I deep fry. I have my fried chicken.
That's why I texted you, because it's so odd for me to deep fry at home.
Yeah.
On weeknight with a baby over there. But it was that perfect moment of, may as well. I wanted some salt and pepper chicken. So I double fried it. I made a dry dredge, then a wet batter that it went back into once it was. So fry it dry and then batter it and then double fry it. So a bit like Korean. And I also had a delivery of some stuff from the Oriental supermarket that I'd come in for work that I'd opened and tasted, and I'd like put that in it. And yeah, so deep fried chicken.
Kush, this has been an absolutely fascinating conversation.
Yeah, unbelievable.
We've mentioned once or twice the fact that you have a brand new baby. I would like to revisit this conversation in a few months' time once she starts trying real food and seeing how that starts.
Weaning with Kush.
Yeah, that weaning with great. Kush. Yeah. But in the short term, I'd like to congratulate you for staying awake for the whole conversation. Yeah,
well done.
Sponsored.
Barocca Red Bull combination.
Mm-hmm.